direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. 3 hours to spend together. Of course, we'll continue to vote on the world's worst hit records whenever we're doing anything, so you can interrupt the topic at hand, which is usually up to you anyway, and vote, as far as that goes. We will play them back on Thanksgiving, a night of turkeys. Now, speaking of Thanksgiving, came across some research here. Everybody's always doing their research on how the Civil War decided what pie you would eat on Thanksgiving. And I thought, you know, there are things we do not discuss on this show. Yeah, anything of importance, for instance. Yes, was the Civil War fought over slavery, or was it fought over states' rights? And on and on, and we don't touch it. Absolutely do not touch it. But we will, without a doubt, weigh in on the Civil War deciding what pie you eat. And so I thought, now, there's a connection here, I'm sure. But the first thing I learned is that, amazingly, Thanksgiving wasn't proclaimed until 1863. It was Abraham Lincoln who declared the last Thursday of November as the day of Thanksgiving. And from then until 1941, when Congress made Thanksgiving an official holiday, every president followed suit. But the problem was, if you're keying in on 1863, that there were a number of people, okay, the entire American South, who didn't really care what Lincoln had to say. In fact, bristled at the thought. And so they were not really on board for this. They were in the middle of the Civil War, and they were absolutely not going to listen to him. So you had a number of states that were slow to adopt the holiday and its traditions, and you got Confederate Army officers who refused to declare Thanksgiving a holiday. In Texas, the governor there wouldn't declare it a holiday until the late 1880s, and you have other Southern governors who resisted it as well. But ultimately, the obvious appeal of Thanksgiving won out, and long after the Civil War was over, and Texas did adopt the holiday, as did every other state. But apparently, there's some question about what we eat and why. I know, there's one too many researchers on hand, don't you think? I'm sorry to say the overall favorite is pumpkin, because I've never understood it myself. That would be the Far West, the Rocky Mountain states, most of the middle, most of the Mideast, the central states as well, and the southern states, interesting, Florida and Georgia and the Carolinas and like that, West Virginia and Virginia. So they're all on board the pumpkin pie. Now, Texas, to be different, number one choice is pecan. I knew I liked Texas for some reason. That'd be Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Louisiana. Then there are four states that give you a choice. A choice between apple or pecan pie. And those states would be Mississippi and Alabama, Tennessee, and Kentucky. Now then you get to the Northeast, where apple reigns supreme. All right, so you had researchers who, of course, did polls and found out, but then they took it a step further. Hopefully they didn't get a tax-funded grant, but they determined why those choices are where they are. As far as I'm concerned, I just don't like pumpkin pie. I don't need to know anymore. But apparently the deal was pumpkin pie, for whatever reason, was considered an anti-union sentiment. Right. And that's why I can't imagine it myself. That's why Texas and Oklahoma and Arkansas and Louisiana said we'll go for pecan. Now, of course, New England, well, for one thing, they have a lot of apples. So that makes sense geographically. But there are some who said, well, the problem here is that that we only want to serve food that's not cultivated by slaves. I shouldn't be laughing at this, but, you know, I think there's a little too much information as far as I'm concerned. Southerners refused to serve the pumpkin pie, even after the war ended. And apparently that was the deal where Texas, of course, I'm on board with them, the pecan pie. So that's the deal. And yes, right. You knew there was going to be a study there somewhere. So who undertook this study? Fortunately, from near what I can tell, there was no tax dollars involved. It was Food and Wine magazine who first investigated the regional patterns. And then read a lot more into it and decided that slavery was the reason. I still say it's because some people like pumpkin pie. I don't know them personally, I don't think. All right, so we'll start with that and move right on to whatever is on your mind. That's right, inconsequential, we hope. 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And it's been a while. Dennis in Colorado, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Well, welcome back to yourself, Raleigh.
Well, thank you. Yes, it's been a real long time. How you feeling?
Oh, I'm feeling great.
Excellent.
Yep, feeling great. Thank you. So we were treated to your replays, which are always fun while you were gone.
Good.
And when I think about replays, I think back to your hiatus between Tennessee and starting in Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
And you had a lot of your XM shows up on your website to download. And I remember listening to some of those great interviews from some of the radio greats like Jerry Blavitt, and the list is long.
Yeah.
Really entertaining, and all the Philadelphia stuff. And it was enriching, to say the least. But when I think about all those that I listened to, I don't remember if you ever did a show where you interviewed Carol.
You know, not directly. I had her on the air with me one night, and we spent some time. And then we were going to do a whole show together when she visited a few years ago. And it happened to be a night when we were having all sorts of power outages and all that, and the equipment failed, and so we just didn't.
Oh.
So it's a shame because we did spend some time on the air occasionally. Yeah.
Good. It was probably 2 months ago now, but I just flipped on my C-Crane radio and tuned up 720, and it wasn't even sunset here yet, and WGN was coming in beautifully.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's indoors, so there's a little bit of noise because everything makes noise. So I switched to the outdoor loop antenna, and it was coming in great, and it was early in the evening before your showtime.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran it, Frank and Johnny were on the air.
Okay. Steve and Johnny.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Steve and Johnny.
Yeah. So it was a Saturday night.
Oh, it probably was.
Yeah.
But I'm not a country music fan, but that's really good radio. They did a great.
Oh, they're great.
Show.
They took over the overnight show after Eddie Schwartz left, and I didn't think anybody could fill Eddie's shoes. And Steve and Johnny did a wonderful job at that for years.
Yeah.
They were just great, and they still are great. And we've got them on the weekends.
Yep, and an interesting thing, they had a country music star on as a guest, and I wish I could remember his name, but he was lamenting a story. He was talking about a previous time when this country music star, forget his name, was on the air, and he was talking about Les Paul and how he admired Les Paul's work and this and that, and he was talking about Les Paul in the past tense as if he had passed away. Well, at that point, he had not passed.
Oh.
So Frankie slipped a note to the producer and said, get Les Paul on the phone.
So, oh, that's great.
The show went along, and a few minutes later, we have another caller now, and it was Les Paul. And it blew this guy away, and they chatted, and Les was actually familiar with some of this country music talent's work, and they agreed to get together and do something. So they did a few shows in New York.
Oh, well, that's great. Yeah.
They never said what show it was, but it's probably the Iridium in New York City, which is a Les Paul-themed club. Yeah. So that's probably where it was. But neat stuff.
And, that is. But I know that sinking feeling when they call you to say they're alive. I had that happen on KMPC when I was doing the music of What's Left of Your Life. I remember I was lamenting how we lost. I think it was Joni James. Well, anyway, she called, and so. Yeah,
get your obituary list updated.
Well, yeah, and there was they did a commercial for their Station of the Stars stuff, and the morning guy, Robert Morgan, had a sidekick for a while. I'm trying to think of his name. He played Mr. Haney on Green Acres, among other things. Pat Buttram.
Pat Buttram.
Pat was truly a funny man. And he was he was describing the commercials, because I think it was something like Andy Williams in a black tie affair, by a piano and all. And Pat said, "My God, scared the hell out of me. I thought for a moment Frankie Lane died." Next thing you know, Frankie Lane calls and says, "Tell that son of a bitch I'm alive."
Great.
Yeah, so it happened. So I can imagine that poor guy who hears Les Paul, he's living.
Yep. Time warp. I heard you talking about the selection of AM stations in Hawaii, and I'm thinking, well, there's 29 licensed AM stations in the state of Hawaii, and given the quality, well, I won't say any, the downright terrible quality of AM antennas and cars these days, and some of the stations you'd have to listen through 13,000-foot volcanoes, so you won't hear on those cars. It's not surprising that you didn't find many AM stations there.
No.
There's a 10,000 watt-er. I don't know where it is, but most of them are 1 or 2,000 watts and non-directional.
Oh, yeah, you absolutely can. You'll hear them, but, I mean, it's obviously not exciting, and it's what you might, you might expect. But it was such a shock to me how very over radioed Honolulu is on FM. I mean, that dial was jammed. Mm-hmm. And, you're not talking about a whole lot of people there. And of course, you're also talking about an economy that's largely tourist driven, which is not particularly good for radio. And I thought to myself, how do they do it? And of course, some of them don't, at least not well.
Yeah.
I'm so
glad you got to enjoy a cruise and didn't fly.
Yes.
I will not fly on a commercial airline anywhere, because I want some reliability these days until they get the controller situation squared away. I think they're doing a good thing by reducing the capacity to maintain safety.
Oh, I do too. But, as you well know, many people are thinking, well, it's because all because of the shutdown. This has been a problem in the works for over a decade.
Ditto. I mean, I was in the system. I've been in the system for 50 years, going back to the air traffic controller strike.
Right.
And I have to tell you, the service got immediately better the moment the supervisors came on board and the strike was in, and they got fired.
Right, the PACO strike,
remained,
of course.
Yeah, and it remained better for years. It was fresh blood. They were excited. They were good. They were proud of their work. And a lot of the previous pre-strike service, there was arrogance. They'd get an attitude about a certain airline, and they'd put them in hold. And it was my mom, and it was a travel agent for 20 years, and she would tell stories that just blew me away. But she loved cruising, and she cruised with some great lines as an agent, where she put together groups, and she sailed on some of the great, great ships. But the last time I was on a cruise was in early 1980s, and it was wonderful. But I don't know. I don't have the appetite now, because I'm some of these foreign ports, and I see people get off the cruise ships, and thousands of them, and it just doesn't impress me.
No,
they look like they're going to fall over.
You're 100% right. And, of course, the lines are divided between, the luxury and the premium, and then you get on down to, like you say, attention Walmart shoppers. What I was surprised is, even on the so-called premium lines, the big thing about cruise that you'd always hear, no matter who it was, talking about their experience, was how wonderful the food was. And it's just not. Now, it's not bad, but wonderful never would have been a word that I'd describe any of it.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, it's like everything else. And, of course, they've consolidated, as you well know.
Yes.
You know, how many lines are owned by Carnival? Over a dozen, I think.
Yeah. And Carnival bought out Sitmar, which was a great Italian cruise line.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful food, great service, and quality entertainment. I mean, Cab Calloway.
Right. No, absolutely. And that's what it's come down to now. It's, there's a couple of companies that own it all, and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of the prices and some of the budget cruises, you wonder how they can do it. And they can do it because they... Well, there's a lot of people that are cruising that don't know what cruising really used to be like.
Well, the other thing is that there are so many things that are extras now that you hear those prices and you think, oh, this is great. This is all I'll pay. Well, when you have your onboard account, of course, and when you get off that ship, you may be surprised to hell and back, depending. And
that was not the case in the past.
Oh, it is now. Virtually all of them, you know, if you buy one of their packages, you know, and their packages will be ridiculous. Like one of them will include 20 hard liquor drinks a day. I'm sorry, they can advertise that all they want. Other than a few people who are probably going to fall overboard, nobody's drinking 20 hard liquor drinks a day. At least hopefully not. And so, you know, but on one of the lines now, you can buy the premium package, but if you want a can of soda, you still have to pay for that, $2, $3.
Oh.
So they nickel and dime it that way. You know, you want Wi-Fi? Well, hell yes, I want Wi-Fi. Well, that's going to cost you every day, you know, and on. So it's not unusual when you're done with it that bargain basement price wound up $100 a day more because of the packages you took or didn't take.
Yeah, wow. I don't know that I would want to wade through all those options. It's too much trouble.
Well, you know, my issue is simply, like my issue with flying is largely that I don't like the bureaucracy. I don't want to be herded. I don't want to stand in their lines. I don't want to do anything, you know. And that's before I even wonder who's in the cockpit or where are they doing that maintenance? I mean, those are issues as well. But before I even get to that, it's just the experience. And actually, cruising commercially isn't really no difference. You know, we waited 3 hours to get on that damn ship. So, you know, it's the same. And you know, so be it. Now, speaking of flying, of course, it's very interesting to watch UPS, and we won't know, of course, the full details of that for a while. But now the government has grounded, as you well know, all the MD-11s, DC-10s, and that's going to slow down shipping because virtually all of them are cargo beasts now.
Yeah, they all are. I think there's only like 25 or 30 MD-11s still in service. It's a great airplane in terms of its performance and its range and cargo capacity, and it's three engines. And flying a three-engine airplane myself right now, the great thing about three-engine airplanes is, of course, you've got triple engines when you're flying over long water.
Oh, do me a favor. Hang on a minute. I just realized I'm about to blow a break. Stay where you are.
Okay.
And we'll pick it up right here on WGN Radio.
Sure. Thank you.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and I don't remember if that was Billy Bob, but it was on the request list. So there it is, Young Holt Unlimited. Neither Young nor Holt was there. Soulful Strut, 1969 on Brunswick, and that is a soap opera if there ever was one. Originally, Barbara Ackland's Am I the Same Girl was recorded in 1968 with lyrics. And then after that, they took out her voice, replaced it with a piano solo, which you heard. And it actually, even though Barbara Ackland's was recorded first in 68, the instrumental was the first to be released in November of 68, and then Ackland's version was released in February of 69. So there you go. Now, we're talking to Dennis in Colorado. And so, yeah, from what I understand, Dennis, we're looking at 9% of UPS's inventory as far as available cargo planes, and about 6.5% for FedEx. So needless to say, I guess some of our packages are going to be late.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, we learn something from every accident. This, of course, reminds me of the American Airlines accident Chicago, where the engine separated. And
so
we
much
learned
so.
A few things from that.
That was 191 in 79, yes.
Yeah, and it killed 260 people or something. It was awful. But what they found out was that the engine replacements were being done on an with a non-approved method of reattaching and attaching the engines, which put a great deal of stress, scarring the aft attachment bolt, and it failed. And when it does, when a underwing engine mounted like that fails, like it did in Chicago, and probably here, they found the engine on the airport property, by the way.
Yeah.
It's generating 60,000 pounds of thrust. So when it detaches from the airplane, it shoots ahead and usually will ride over the top of the wing, smashing the front of the wing and disabling hydraulic and fuel and oil lines, and probably the slats retracted because they lost their command. And that reduces, that compromises the lift on the left wing, and you see the airplane rolled left.
Right.
And that's what happened in Chicago, but back in those days, noise was king. Reduce the noise for them.
So
what they had us doing, they had all of us doing, was climbing at max angle.
Yes.
For the first 1,000 feet. Well, max angle climb is a slower speed than it is safe for loss of engine.
You're
it
so
complicates
right.
It complicates the control and the lift. So now, you know, our training has all changed since then. As soon as we take off, gear up, flaps up, and drop the nose to attain a safer speed in case you lose an engine. Now, a three-engine airplane, it performs much better than a two-engine airplane on what we call second-segment climb, where you assume loss of engine at the worst possible time, and you should be able to abort or else continue the flight and take off. Now, one thing that's good, all these major carriers, and including UPS, they have dispatchers, and their only job is to calculate runway numbers. They don't leave that to the pilots. They calculate the load and the fuel required for the mission, the runway required, and they publish and send you the speeds and all of the data. And I'm sure that was done here. But when an engine departs and crashes into the front wing, all bets are off. And I'm sure they're going to find the reason that this engine detached. But when these dispatchers give us a number, they give us a fuel... They give us what's called a balanced field length. And that's that determines V1,
right,
which is the refusal speed. After that, you continue to go. And you don't really know if that's the amount of runway required to stop you for a failure at V1 or to continue the takeoff and climb. And it really doesn't matter. All you've got to believe is at V1, at that decision speed, you take your hands off the throttle and you're going no matter what.
Right.
And I don't know at what point they got the alarm. I do know that the airplane had 150,000 pounds of fuel on it, which is 100,000 pounds short of full fuel for that airplane. I don't know how much cargo was on board, but the maximum runway length for a fully loaded DC-10 at sea level is about 10,000 feet. And that runway is almost 12,000. So they had a couple thousand feet of grace there, but... You know, when you they factor in reaction time to V1,
right?
You know, when alarm bell goes off, You know, you react within 3 seconds. You know, all that is calculated on every takeoff, so it's a pretty safe system. But when the aerodynamics in the airframe get compromised, all bets are off.
Oh, and it was. You know, you mentioned noise abatement, and that's always been a big thing with me too. Especially that's why I wouldn't fly into Orange or out of Orange County, California.
Oh, yeah.
There, John Wayne. Man, that was like a damn rocket, straight up. And they built those houses after that airport was there, and plus most of the noise was coming from El Toro anyway. So yeah. I was amazed that we didn't see more at that airport. And I don't know if they have changed that, but the last I heard, they were still on noise abatement.
Yeah, there are about 7 microphones off the end of that runway that sniff the noise, and you get a violation if you exceed the noise. Oh, they write you a letter. It's not a real violation.
Yeah.
But if you do that enough times, they'll ban your airplane from from going there.
Right.
But and Santa Monica was the same way. And I would climb really steep out of there, and I'd usually brief the passengers because it's a steep climb with all 2 or 3, whatever airplane I was in, engines running, and it and I never set off the set off the microphones, but I did a steeper than what's normal just because I knew the airplane well, but because I didn't want to set off the phones and incur the wrath.
Right.
But,
oh, got it.
John Wayne will be that way, and it'll be that way for a long time.
Yeah, and of course, unlike Santa Monica, John Wayne has a lot of heavy iron coming in out of there with a lot of passengers on
it. Yes, and it's a short runway.
Right, it is. And, you know, Santa Monica is mostly private, mostly GA, so you don't have the exact same problem. But, yeah, it is a problem. So, yeah, no wonder I'll drive everywhere. So it's fascinating to watch. But the bottom line, I think, here we are going into the holiday season, and I think that think we're going to see a little delay. Now, of course, they'll buy cargo space from the passenger carriers, and there's usually a lot of that to go around. But even so, it's going to be a slowdown.
Yeah, I'm not interested in getting into that system or riding on the cattle cars for this. Well, the whole thing's, like I said, you know, I take the train and I drive, and I don't fly unless I have to. So there are some alternatives, though. There's an airline called JSX, which operates out of private airports, out of private FBOs, and no security line hassles. They do check you, but, I mean, there's 4 people in the line. So,
right.
And they fly to certain places, not everywhere, and it's a little more expensive than a budget airline. But it's like getting on a private jet. There's no middle seat.
You say a little more expensive, so it's not. And I'm aware of them because I think they're, you know, they've got hubs in Vegas and in Burbank. And,
they go to Scottsdale.
Yeah, Scottsdale. You're right. I know just and Dallas Love Field. But I never looked into that because I just figured it was just pricey. So
well, I think here to Scottsdale, I've priced a few of them, and Burbank is in the $400 range. So,
oh, that's
yes,
not
a
bad.
Little more.
No, that's not bad. No, that's not bad at all. You know, the first thing when John first wanted to go to Hawaii, he said, well, let's charter a plane. I said, how much money do you think we have?
And
you know, I said, we can't do that. So, so when you're talking $400, that's great. Now, granted, Denver to Scottsdale, not a tremendous distance, but even so, that's affordable.
Well, when you think about not having to go down to Phoenix or Denver International, you know, the long lines and the airport's halfway to Kansas and the parking and the, just the hassle of it all to me is not, you know, is not very appealing. And that's why I've used JSX because it's the same airport I fly out of. I just park in the parking lot and step on the plane.
I guess some of their big runs, I'm looking at their map right now, is that Fort Lauderdale to New York, Westchester especially. A lot of flights going up the eastern seaboard every day. And you can get as far north as Reno or Salt Lake City, you know, Denver. Or like I say, Love Field. You can get to Love Field. So it's a start.
Yeah, and a lot of the airports they fly in and out of are not subject to the traffic delays that are being imposed on the big airports.
That's true.
And there's a cascading effect there because when an airline cancels a flight, that means that 10 other airplanes People are going to miss their connection.
That's right.
And they're just going to bottle up everywhere.
And, of course, a lot of these cruise and fly things, if you didn't book your flight through the cruise line, if you don't make that cruise deadline, it doesn't matter. You're not getting your money back. They do not care.
That's a good point, yeah.
So, yeah, I think, and, you know, coming into winter and all that, there's a lot of that. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see. I guess they're going to have to, in Oklahoma City, ramp up classes there, since right now everybody goes through Oak City still.
Yeah. Are we blowing a break at 47?
We're getting close, actually. So,
okay. So, well, I wanted to give you some...
Yeah, I'm so glad you called. Yes, and call me again soon. And if you hear anything else... oh, by the way, do you know whether they were GE or Pratt & Whitney? You know, MD-11s
come
with either.
The MD-11 came with both.
Right.
So I don't know which engines were on there.
Yeah, I don't either. I did, but that's the first thing I thought. I wondered whether it was PW or GE. All right, well, if I hear, I'll let you know. If you hear, let me know.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Ralph.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Dennis. All right. So 888-876-5593. Glad you guys are watching out for me, because God knows I can't do it on my own. I do know enough to tell you, if you haven't been to the Sea Crane website, you should go there, ccradio.com. You know, so yeah, I was on this cruise, and of course, you know, I got to take radios. And first thing I grabbed, CCEP Pro. It's just simplicity that's wonderful. It's needle and dial tuning, so slide rule tuning. It doesn't have any of the bells and whistles. It's got one button for power and one button for a bright light display, and you can control it whether you want it to be narrow or wideband, and there is a tone switch for bass and treble control and all that. But other than that, it's just a radio, which is exactly what I wanted. And like all the radios that Bob Crane had a hand in developing, the reception is just sublime. For AM, it's got that twin-coil ferrite antenna, which makes AM just not only sound good, and it does, but so much more sensitive to picking up things. It is just terrific. It's got a line-in jack, so you can connect your smartphone for audiobooks and podcasts for voice clarity that you're never going to hear on a smartphone. And it's a terrific little radio. It's not expensive either, and no bells and whistles and all that. So I highly recommend it. And if you can't see the radio, this is one for sure to look at, because you don't have to worry about pushing things that you have no idea what they are. You'll pick this up in no time at all. Go to ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com. Take a look at the CCEP Pro. If you can't go online for some reason, or if you've got questions, they've got answers, and they've got customer service in the USA that will be on hand 24/7 to talk to you. You can order by phone if you want, and that's 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. But if you can go online, beautiful catalog, not only great products, but great information about radio as well. You look at that CC Radio EP Pro at ccradio.com. You tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
I got a gal and she's so fine. Let me hug and kiss her all the time. Like you see her through the chicken pot. Shakes all over from the bottom to the top. Boom, 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 boom. I said boom. Boom, boom. Well, boom, boom, baby, please don't stop. Boom, boom, baby, I've made it clear. Till I die, I'll always want you near. Every evening when the lights are low, I watch my boom, boom, make it you go. Boom, 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 boom. I said boom. So, yeah!
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. He was still Crash Craddock then, no Billy. Boom Boom Baby, 1959 on Coronet, and Cleveland Dennis requested we play it. I hope he heard it. All right, so Joe from Aurora, if he's still there, I think clears up the mystery as who that country artist was that didn't realize that Les Paul was still with us. So, Joe, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. How you doing tonight?
All right. How about yourself?
Not bad, not bad. I've just got to throw this out. I've been watching the Northern Lights while I've been on hold for the past however long. It's been beautiful out here.
Any colors other than green?
Red. Lots.
Oh,
lots
red. Oh, that's, you know, every time I see them, it's usually just green. So red, that's nice.
Oh, it's been glorious. It's
good.
Been glorious. But it was actually kind of country rock. It was Charlie Daniels.
which is just great. You know, I knew that Charlie and Steve and Johnny were close, and I knew that there was that connection to Les Paul, but I didn't know it was Charlie Daniels who didn't realize he was alive.
Yeah, and that struck me as amazing. So I kind of had a connection to their show that I won't get into, but yeah, he was talking with them, and he was saying how he would love to meet him, and so they had the producer call Les on the other line, and they put him on the air, and then it led to a conversation between those two. And I think I might have a tape of it, actually.
Oh, that's great. I know Steve and Johnny's Both Sides Now blog has a whole retrospective of that. When Charlie passed away, sadly, they showed some of the pictures and all that. And so yeah, that's terrific. Well, I'm so glad you let me know, and I'm delighted you called and are listening.
Yeah, absolutely. And that conversation with Dennis was fantastic. That was a great educational conversation.
Oh, so terrific.
That was much appreciated. From so many of your other callers. So
well, thank you.
Really
thank
appreciate
you.
Your show.
Thank you, Joe. Talk to you soon, I hope. All right, so we got two more hours of this, and I hope we got Jim and Ruth and David and Fran. I hope you will hang in there as we continue on WGN Radio.
Somebody told me she loves me, she loves me, she told me, she told me, and that's how I know. Just wait till you see her face, I'll bet even yours will glow. I could say bella or say que beleza to praise her, but tell me what good will it do? Just wait till you see her smile, you just won't believe it's true. Like the sound
like
of
the
thunder,
sound
in,
of
the
thunder
sky.
In the sky.
Like the waves
like
go crashing in the
sea. In the sea.
That's the way
that's
her
the love way
affected,
her affected me.
And you feel as I do, if you know what I knew. Somebody told me she loves me, she loves me, she told me, she told me how lucky for me to look at delicious you and know that it's all for me.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and I don't remember who wanted to hear Marcos Valle, but I tried to pick something that maybe you hadn't heard, and that's from his Samba 68 album, and the female was his wife at the time, Anna Marie, and oh man, was that ever soap opera. Her father had been the program director for Rede Globo, the big network in Brazil, and she was just beautiful, too. And they were just, you know, kids in love, pretty much. Unfortunately, what happened was she got heavily involved in drugs. And in fact, she became known in Rio as a lady in white. She sadly passed away now, but she just used to roam the beaches dressed only in white. And people thought she was, you know, perhaps homeless or something. But far from that. Amer Deodato arranged that album when he was pretty much just a kid as well. And just a terrific album, and so much on there, including "So Nice," which was a big hit in the States, which Marcos Valle wrote when he was a teenager. So 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh and Jim is in Richmond. All right, so Saturday was clean out. How did it go?
Thank you for taking my call, and I want to say that was a beautiful song.
Thanks.
And Saturday was, if you ever seen the cartoons with the Tasmanian devil, I don't think you have.
You're right, I haven't.
Right. That was my brother and his son. They showed up first.
Okay.
And the dumpster was delivered on Friday, and my friend and I shopped, and we put a tarp over it. We had to pay $35 for the tarp.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother says, why'd you do this? Because I don't trust my neighbors.
Okay.
So, anyways, all of a sudden I hear a car pull up and the dog's barking, and my brother and his son already pulled the tarp off. He's in the shed
grabbing stuff and, you know, throwing in the dumpster because I told them I needed the shed emptied.
Right.
And then they go, okay. He said, tell Brandon what you want out of the house. So I pointed to the two recliners I want out and all that. And then all of a sudden, like a tornado, they're tearing things apart because you take the backs off that are recliners, you know, and throw them in and stuff like that. And I said, I need this dresser out, and it's got two doors that open, you know, because the back fell out. Okay. My brother picks it up, slams it on the ground, breaks into a million pieces, and they carry that out.
Okay.
And they're going through my house like a whirlwind. And with my limited vision, he kept saying, what next? What about this? What about this? And I go, you know,
I don't know. Saying, you can't
I
see
can't
it.
Can't see.
Right.
You know? And so my brother's picking on me, you old blind man, you know, and his son starts screaming at him, quit picking on him, you know, and they go through the house. And then later on, my younger brother shows up, and then my brother, friends and his buddy show up. There's five people here going through my house.
Right.
And what about this? What about this? What about this? And it got to the point where I didn't know what ended up in the dumpster.
Right.
And I had my friend, she was here. We worked for days. We had like 25 bags of stuff to throw in there. And they threw that in there and stuff. And I went into the shed, and there was nothing left in there. I don't know what they took or what, but basically, I can't see, so it doesn't matter to me.
Right.
I had four filing cabinets, two-drawer filing cabinets that, you know, and then they took those out, you know, and I don't know where they came from, but they were out.
Good.
So it got to the point where, you know, it got so emotional, you know, I'm standing there and they go, quit effing crying, you know.
Right.
And then they came in the spare bedroom, which I had designed for all the hockey memorabilia, and they just swooped everything out, all the pictures, all the trophies, everything. And I wanted it out, but they took all that out, and then I had a 7-foot-high bookcase that I made, and I said, that all that stuff on the bookcase goes, and then four people are in there grabbing everything and throwing it in the dumpster and stuff, and then they... I worked very hard. I'm not a carpenter, and I did a very good job on that bookcase. Then they broke it up in pieces and threw it in there.
Of course. And, now, what did you have left?
I still have a lot more to take out because it got to the point with she wasn't here. There was a lot of stuff she wanted to make sure about this and that. So there's still a lot of stuff that has to go.
Is there any room in the dumpster?
Oh yeah, it's 7/8 full or 3/4 full, and it's 8 by 20 by 4 feet high.
Right.
And now you've got to hear. Oh, and also too is while this is going on, my brother who built the mailbox, he just loves going in there and getting my mail, and then he comes out and he goes, here, this was in your mailbox. And it was the anesthesiologist sent a bill for the August date and saying, this has now been sent to a
collection agency. Yeah, well, you know it hasn't. So, you don't have to worry.
No, I'm just saying it. So I totally freaked out. And I'm sitting there going, will you stop crying? You know? And it got so stressful. And then finally they put the cover on. And then Sunday we got 2 inches of snow.
Right.
It collapsed the cover.
Of course.
And here's the funny part. Today, and the dumpster's been there since Friday, and the people that live kitty corner across the street from me, you know, I've been involved with them for years and years and years, and I put between me and you thousands of dollars into helping them out.
Okay.
Her daughter was hooked on the heroin and, and, you know, all the money I spent and everything. They haven't talked to me for 2 years because they heard me on the porch 2 years ago when I got COVID that I was bitching because I was in the car with them when I caught the COVID.
Uh-huh.
And they haven't spoke to me for 2 years.
Okay.
She calls up and says, "Hi, I'm not being nosy, but are you moving?" And I go, "No." And then I told her how bad my eyesight was, and I told her all the stories and stuff going on. And at the very end of it, she turns to me and says, "I have two mattresses in my garage. Can I throw them in your dumpster?
Yeah.
I'll pay you." I'm going, and I got off the phone. I go, "What the? I bought a stove for them when they went out, because I swear my mother told me to. I paid their $400 electric bill when they were broke, you know, and I'm going, and now you want to throw two mattresses in my thing?" So I called my brother up, and he goes, "What are you complaining about? Just throw them in there. There's room."
Exactly.
You know? So, but, you know, and it, to me, it was an insult to me. You know?
Well, I wouldn't worry about it.
But
you got enough on your plate without even thinking about that. All right. So when's the next dive into this stuff? You know, for the remaining stuff you want to get rid of. When are you next scheduling that?
Working that, we've got 15 days to get rid of the thing. But anyways, Sunday morning I woke up. I was so emotional. I could not handle it. You know. Mm-hmm. And it was because of all the hockey stuff I had, I threw out and everything. And I was really, really just tearful for all the way until finally the football game came on. And then I got my mind distracted.
Okay.
And so now what's on the schedule is Thursday I go to the Department of Human and Family Services to find out a new
insurance plan
for next. Mm-hmm. And then I got the letter from the second doctor,
okay.
So I have those. And then on the 20th, I go and take a blood test at my clinic that has my primary care doctor, and I'm bringing both of those letters, and I'm going to have them put into my chart that they know that this is the condition that I have.
Yep.
And then on the 24th, I go in there for my year-end Medicare review, you know, and that's the plans of what's going on.
All right.
So,
well, it sounds like things are moving along. You just have to be good to yourself and get your emotions out of it, because that takes a lot of energy to be that emotional.
Right. And then number two is, this is all because I don't want my friend, because she's listed as to take care of my affairs after I'm gone.
Right.
I have to go through all this. And I'm very proud of myself that I am getting this all done.
Absolutely. You'll be so much better off. And lean and mean is the way to be, so that you can do what you want to do rather than have your possessions own you.
Right. And when they cleaned out the shed, I didn't care what they took, because I can't see any of it anyway.
All right.
You know? And they took the tools, the shovels, and all that kind of stuff.
Well, good.
I said, you know, take whatever you want, you know. And they took my hockey equipment, my goalie equipment, and all that stuff. Take it. I don't, you know.
Yeah. No, absolutely. There's a time when it comes to part with stuff, because it's not doing you any good anymore. So don't let it be an albatross around you. You're doing the right thing, and I think it's wonderful.
Right.
So keep it up.
And then, like I said, and then... When I'm going to the human services, I'm looking for anything they could look up to help me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And there may be all sorts of programs.
I really want to get that HumanWare situation.
Yeah.
Because John was talking about it today.
Mm-hmm.
You set it up on your table. You want to read, and the screen is the size of an iPad, and then it enlarges it up like that.
Yep.
And I want to see if either I can get that from the insurance company or from Social Security, you know.
I hope so. Well, you'll have plenty to share after your meeting. Can't wait to hear about it.
Okay, and I thank you for the time, and
absolutely.
I thank you for letting me speak about it.
Absolutely. You know, be good to yourself. Be kind. Don't let your emotions rule you. Just take a break.
Okay.
All right.
Love you.
Thanks. All right. Likewise. All right. So good. Good, yeah. It's terrible while we're in these earthly bodies. We tend to get so emotional, and man, does that ever take a lot of energy. 888-876-5593. Going to get some votes. Going to find out about the Vet Tribute, and yes, rural versus city. Well, good things to say about both, actually. Coming up on WGN Radio.
Step inside. Now the door to my heart is still open wide.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's the 1954 original. That's a very young Buddy Holly along with Bob Montgomery. Buddy and Bob. Bob wrote it. Sonny Curtis played on it. And no one ever heard it. And after Buddy Holly died, when Norman Petty and Clovis was intent on releasing everything he ever did, he overdubbed it. He took that song, and in 1965 it was released on Coral, an album called Holly in the Hills, and he grabbed the Fireballs. Jimmy Gilmer was not with him at the time for the overdubbing, and Cleveland Dennis wanted to hear that version. So the 1954 original is still there in its radiant glory, but overdubbed with the Firestones, the Fireballs, and again released in 1965 on a Coral album. So that was for Cleveland Dennis. It actually is not what I had planned to play, but I was going to give you some Antonio Carlos Jobim along with Astrid Gilberto. But we'll do that next, and we'll get to your calls next, right here on WGN Radio.
Eu quis amar, mas tive medo e quis salvar. Matar o seu coração. Água de beber, água de beber, camarada. Água de beber, água de beber, camarada. Tibatunda, patelada badava, tibatunda, patelada badava, tibatunda.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. It's Antonio Carlos Jobim and Astrid Gilberto. It was written by Jobim and Vinicius. And actually, it's one of those things that's a little hard to translate. Agua de beber means water to drink. And it was actually inspired. Vinicius and Jobim were, when they were building Brasilia in 1959, the capital that was in the interior, you know, in the forest there with absolutely no roads or anything like that. That's where they were relocating the capital of Brazil. And they were there working on a symphony for the new capital. And they heard the sound of water. And a guard explained that there was a well nearby, and he said, "Agua de beber, camarad," which means water to drink, comrade. And they took it. And their meaning, though, was not so much water to drink as much, you know, the literal translation, as much as representing just like water is essential to life, then love for the object of affection is essential to life, meaning that that could be life and death in terms of having your loved one. So that's what Agua de Beber is about. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. And Fran is in Austin, so Fran is going to vote on more hits, more of the world's worst hits. All right, Fran. Are you still with us, Fran?
Yes. Traveling Man.
Oh, Ricky Nelson.
Ricky Nelson. I cannot stand that song.
Really? Oh. Interesting.
Oh, I hate it.
That's interesting. I wonder what it is about it.
I just don't like the whole, you know, he's got, you know, all he's like he owns them. You know, I just, you know, and me being into lyrics, you know,
Waiting
for me down in old Mexico. If you're ever in Alaska, stop and see my cute little Eskimo.
Yes. My sweet Fräulein down in Germantown. Yes.
And it makes my heart want to burn. Yeah. And it's like, they're all, you know, just waiting for him to come around.
Right.
And,
Jerry Fuller wrote it. And I never really thought about the lyrics. The thing that always amazed me, kind of like, you know, I think Snuff Garrett is a god for making Gary Lewis sound good. Well, the same way with Jimmy Haskell and Joe Johnson, who made Ricky Nelson sound good. And so the production values on those records are actually better than they should be, I think. And so
I hate to admit, but some of the Ricky Nelson stuff I like. Like, I like Lonesome Town.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, when Jerry Fuller wrote it, and this was 1960 that he wrote it, he pitched it to Ricky Nelson, but that wasn't the first person. He wanted Sam Cooke to record this. And Sam Cooke's manager felt about the way you did, actually. And so next in line was Ricky Nelson. But what made that record successful was the Gene Pitney-written song On the Other Side, Hello, Mary Lou. And so, that's what really did it. And on that record, the Jordanaires are backing him as well. So Joe Johnson, who was with Challenge, he was responsible for the Champ sounding good. In fact, Joe Johnson produced Tequila, and Joe was an owner of Challenge and a 4-star. So there was a lot going for that song. But yeah, you're not going to get around those lyrics. Yes, the Polynesian and Waikiki and every port at least one. Yes, well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, it was one of those two-sided hits. So would it have been number one if it weren't for Hello, Mary Lou? Well, I don't want to speculate on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, of course, and that was, you know, the thinking at that time. I mean, that was a song of its time, and I realized that. But I still, you know, I didn't even like it when I was a kid.
You know, so I'm not a words person. I never really thought of it. But I guess maybe that would go good with Teenage Idol that he did. But so
I kind of, Teenage Idol is kind of, I like that one. In the sense it, you know, it's kind of sad.
Yeah, right. He puts himself down. That's
some
right.
Call the me a teenage idol. Some people say they envy me. How lonesome I can be.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. And I got no rest when I'm feeling weary. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah, right. No one to tell my troubles to. But let's see. I'm so busy thinking about the lyrics to that. What was I? I wanted to. put my vote in for Hotel California.
All right. Now, I'm glad you mentioned this, because actually I got an email vote, and like I say, if I find the emails, I'll count them, but I much prefer that people call. But I should mention what his votes were so that I could you know, let people know in case they wanted to second him. And so, yeah, right. Good luck on finding that now, Raleigh. Yeah. I wrote them all down, and then, yeah, I don't know. Let me see. Maybe I put it on this list. Let's okay, here we go. No, that's wrong. Here we don't go. That's not. Well, I know one was Once You Understand by Think.
Oh, God, yes. I'll put that on mine.
Okay, I figured you might. Yeah, he had some real real jewels here, and I should try and... I wonder what I did with that email. And it was just an hour or two ago, but hey, I've been tired tonight. So I didn't really go to sleep last night. It was a long story. So let's...
I know about those nights, believe me.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm absolutely sure. And I'm trying to think. He's from Washington. I know that. So that was part of Think, because that was unfortunately a Seattle hit. Maybe he wasn't from Washington. I don't know. He's from somewhere. Obviously, they're all from somewhere, Raleigh.
Trying to think of some other ones in that vein. What was that one that Art Linkletter did?
Oh, God. Yeah, with the daughter thing. Oh, God. Yes. Oh, God. That was painful.
That was.
Yeah.
Oh, well, speaking of painful, don't just stand there.
Now are you thinking of We Love You, Call Collect?
Yes.
They also had Dear Mom and Dad. But yes, all right. So we'll get some art in there. Now, who else were you just mentioning?
Who did I just say? Did I say Rhiannon? No, I didn't say Rhiannon, but I'll say Rhiannon.
Okay, good. And that I believe would be...
Anything by Stevie Nicks, I would say, because she sounds like a cat that got caught in a rocking chair.
All right. Well, you know, you got to pick individual songs, but we'll take.
Yeah, I know. So I picked Rhiannon.
Very good. I got it down there. That's good.
Let's see. I guess it's. I know I had some more, but they left what's left in my mind, as you usually say.
Yeah,
so.
That's right. That's right. My mind up and left me a long time ago now. But
I think that I keep thinking, oh, God, mine's getting worse. And then if somebody was talking to me about, well, when you go into a room and you forget why you went in there or you don't know where you put something, that's one thing. But if you're holding something in your hand and you say, I don't know what this is.
Well, that's a nice way to say it, but that doesn't really comfort me too much, because I am the person that was...
It doesn't me either. Yeah,
I was walking for an entire hour around the around a bass boat factory in Flippin, Arkansas, of all things, and I'm looking for my sunglasses. And here is the horribly embarrassing part, all right? Some guy says, they're on the top of your head.
Oh, my God. That happened to me one time with my purse. I was getting ready for a job interview. This was when I was young. I mean, I had no excuse for this. I was in my 20s. And my ex-husband comes home, and he's going to take me to this job interview. And I'm frantic. And he says, you know, what is wrong? You know, what are you looking for? And I said, I can't find my purse anywhere.
Oh, no.
He said, look on your shoulder.
Oh, no. No. See, this is just the problem. I do fully understand this. All right.
And I think, well, I was only 20. Of course, I was really nervous about job interview and all that. And
I found it, by the way. While we're talking, I found it.
Oh, okay.
And what I did was, rather than try to find the sender, I searched for Once You Understand by Think. And so, yes.
That'll do it.
Yeah. In addition to Once You Understand by Think, Adam in Lakewood, Washington, also chose In the Year 2525. What the World Needs Now.
I'll go with that.
Okay, good. Let's get that on there. All right. Zager and Evans, yes, at their finest or not. The Tom Clay, What the World Needs Now is Love / Abraham Martin John.
Yes.
Yeah, you want to go for that, do you? Okay.
So yes, I will.
Okay, all right. And in addition to that, he has, We Built This City by Starship.
God, I was going to mention that one.
Okay.
Thank you, whoever that was. Yes. Yeah, that goes on mine, too.
Yes. No, that's Adam in Lakewood, Washington. All right. So, so yes, and that's why I want people to call in, because, you know, I can't be trusted to have these emails. And very often when you call and say something, it sparks somebody else to say, oh, yeah, I got to have that one on there. Yeah.
Well, you know, it gives me a good reason, because there's a lot of times when I want to call in, especially when I hear you, you know, really needing callers,
yeah,
and I want to call in and help you out, but I can't think of anything to say.
Understood. Well, see, that's my problem. I get on the air and can't think of anything to say. But thank God for engineer Bob. Bob, who was in master control many nights, sends me, like, now it's hundreds of links. So that's where I got the whole Civil War debate about what pie to have for Thanksgiving, let alone whether to have Thanksgiving.
I'll take your pumpkin pie.
You will.
I love pumpkin pie.
You will eat pumpkins.
Yeah.
All right.
I will eat pumpkin pie.
Okay. Well, I love it. You're not alone. Most states share your passion, actually, more often than not. Just a few outliers for pecan and the Northeast for apples. So, but, you know, you would think apples, well, Washington, nope, Washington goes right for that pumpkin. So I don't know.
And it's weird because a lot of times you can't get it except around Thanksgiving, and I would eat it any time.
Uh-huh.
So, and they used to have this pumpkin ice cream that I used to love.
Really? Well, that sounds truly painful. Oh,
and then you were talking the other night about this butternaise stuff.
Oh, God. Now, tell me, if that's not a diet aid, nothing is. I might never eat again if they're putting products like butternaise.
I never knew, because I always put butter on mine, you know, put butter on the outside and then, you know, put it in the skillet.
Yes.
But I never heard of anybody putting mayonnaise.
Well, here's the really bad part. It's already out of stock at the Tillamook website.
Oh, my God. Somebody's buying the garbage.
Yes, that's right. Tillamook butternaise. $15 for 8 ounces. Hell, it should cook the sandwich for you.
No.
Yeah, right.
No,
buttery,
no,
crispy,
no.
Melty,
I'm
and gaunt.
$15. There's a lot of things, food products I might buy. Smoked salmon or something
smoked salmon, yes. Yes, I love smoked salmon.
Oh, I love smoked
yeah,
salmon.
Me too, yes. Oh, man, I can eat that by the pound, and it's a fortune. But it is so good.
I know. And I was like, they saw some at the store, and it was like 4 ounces. I'm like,
well, and
that's not even a snack.
Right. And it's just not the same in those, you know, vacuum pack packages.
No,
you know?
It's not. I can't find the kind I like with the kind in the vacuum packs don't have the right texture.
You're absolutely right about that. They don't. And the other thing is, sometimes they treat it like it's lox, which is just uber salty. I do not want that.
Yeah.
I want smoked salmon.
I don't want that either.
Yes, exactly. Nova Scotia salmon.
That's what I want to get in my net. I can't find it anywhere.
Oh, I know.
I buy it, and my mom used to buy it for me for Christmas every year, but she's not around anymore, my aunt doesn't remember where she used to get it.
There is a catalog that sells it, and you can get the whole side. Oh, man. But, you know, it's frightfully...
Oh.
Yeah, I know. I may have to break down and do that, but it is frightfully expensive, but it is really good. And, you know, in a pinch, even salmon sushi has a lot of that flavor to it. But
like the song says, no likey yicky yucky sushi.
Well, you know, I actually did like it, but more than a few doctors said, with your immunity issues, do not. And I said, all right, I trust you. So and it's sad because John eats it. In fact, he bought it today in front of me, and I'm like, I know. And it looks so nice.
That's mean, John. Yeah, come on now.
Really. Yeah. Well, I got to check it. He also bought a lottery ticket. I've got some in here. I never buy lottery tickets because astrologically I can't win. You know, it's according to my chart, I'm just out of luck. But his chart, I've never seen an astrological chart that looked like somebody would be a winner in the lottery. So I've said, you know, you've got the gene here. Just buy it, but not in front of me because I'll jinx it. So he went today.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Bought some for the lottery.
One of these days I want to get that done. I want to get my chart done.
Yeah, and I'll be happy to tell you planets. I'm not saying I'll spend a lot of time interpreting them, but I'll be happy to tell you planets. Now, it's Western astrology. I do the stuff that Americans do. I don't do the great Vedic astrology that Indians do. But I'll put you on hold if you give me your date, time, and place. And time is essential on this. And place. I can
I got to find out what, because I don't remember what time. Yeah, I know the date and the place. Yeah, I don't know the time.
I need an exact time. And if you can give me that, and when you find out, I'll be happy to do your planets because I can do that in about a minute. That's
okay.
Easy. That's really
I'll
easy.
I'll do that.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was first learning to do astrology about 50 years ago, I used to offer to do everybody's charts for free and I'd do all these big things. And now it's like, hell, I'll tell you where your planets are. That's what you get. And, Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing I can tell you is I was born. No, I think I was at 9 o'clock at night, or nine something, on October 3rd, 1955.
Yeah. Well, figure it out. Go get the birth certificate or whatever, and give me the exact time.
I'll figure it out, and I'll let you know.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'll be happy to run that. No problem.
And I'll be calling with more turkeys.
I'm counting on it.
Oh,
all right.
Did I mention the honey hole?
Oh no! Oh no! We haven't gotten the tour of the honey house yet. All right, so
I know. So put that on there.
Yeah, we got to get Bobby Gold's.
Okay.
Bow. Yes. Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right.
Good
bye.
Deal. All right. Yeah. See the tree? How big it's grown? Yep. It's part of the tour of the honey house. Bobby Goldsboro. Let's see. Honey. Yeah. A fine choice. That usually does very well. All right, so I think there's actually, we're in breaks already. I probably had the two together. It's probably this way till news, and I apologize to Adam and all the ships at sea, but here's the deal. We have another hour of this, assuming I survive it. So we'll be back in moments. Of course, I'm talking to myself and anybody on the stream or on hold on WGN Radio.
É pau, é pedra, é o fim do caminho. É o resto de toco, é um pouco sozinho. É um caco de vidro, é a vida, é o sol. É a noite, é a morte, é o laço, é o anzol. É peroba do campo,
é o nó da madeira.
Canga, candeia,
é uma tita pereira.
É madeira de vento,
da ribanceira.
É um mistério profundo,
é o queira ou não queira.
É o vento ventando, é o fim da ladeira. É a viga, é o vão, festa da comida.
É a chuva chovendo, é conversa ribeira das águas de março, é o fim da canseira.
É o pé, é o chão,
é a mastradeira.
Passarinho na mão,
pedra de atiradeira.
É uma ave no céu,
é uma ave no chão.
É um regato, é uma fonte,
é um pedaço de pão.
É o fundo do poço, é o fim do caminho. No rosto o desgosto, é um pouco sozinho. É um estrepe,
é um prego,
é uma ponta.
É um
É uma cor,
é um conto.
É um peixe, é um gesto.
É uma prata brilhando.
É a luz da manhã.
É o tijolo chegando.
É a lenha, é o dia. É o fim da picada. É a garrafa de cana. Estilhaço na estrada.
É o projeto da casa. É o corpo na cama. É o carro enguiçado. É a lama, é a lama.
É um passo.
É uma ponte.
É um sapo.
É uma rã.
É o resto.
And radio. I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, Liz Regina, Antonio Carlos Jobim, 1974. And you can tell they're having just a great time. What you can't tell is how furious they were. She hated him. And actually, she gained more respect for him after that song. Now, sadly, dead of a drug overdose. But during that, at one point, she spoke not a lick of English. And the bottom line was she, at one point, wanted the recording engineer to translate some of her vitriol. They, of course, didn't. The two managed to record it, and they just sounded terrific together. And I think that afterwards they actually were a little more on the same page. But nonetheless, Waters of March, Aguas de Marcos is what we got, and just an infectious song, I think. Yeah, one of Carol's favorite too. I would always, unfortunately, play this stuff around her. her. And and she actually not only tolerated it, but liked a lot of it. And she just loved that one. So there you have it. 888-876-5593 is 8888-RALEIGH. All right. Now, if David in Forest City is still with us, we're going to have a debate about rural versus city. David, are you still around?
Yeah, I'm still here. And the song that one of my coworkers, Doug Campbell, who was chief engineer at WCCO, he hated the Kirby Stone 4.
Oh, Bubbles, Bangles, and Beads. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I can understand why.
Yes. Well, you know, Amer Deodato actually did a version of it, which instrumental, which was not a bad song. I remember when that album came out, I said, my God, he must be a god. He made the Kirby Stone 4 sound good. So, yeah, all right.
Oh, all right. Was that a Brazilian?
No, Kirby Stone. Well, Deodato was, yes. Let me pull a little of that. He in America, probably he's only known for the theme from 2001. It was a terrific album, and on that album was a version of Baubles, Spangles, and Beads. I'll let you hear a little of it because it so improved it. So I thought that was a lot better.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
I could stand it.
Yes, a very fine choice. I remember one of the MOR guys I used to listen to when Kirby Stone 4 was first out used to call it Bubbles, Bagels, and Beans. So, all right.
So, yeah. So the field I was in was engineering, and so the people with knowledge, I suppose, got to be chief engineers in the bigger cities, And from talking to them, I can understand, you know, I know they had a lot of knowledge that I didn't have. So, like Andy Laird in Milwaukee.
Sure.
And Dave, or is it Mark Durenberger? Which one?
Mark Durenberger.
Not the senator.
Yeah, Mark Durenberger, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember him very well. And
Ogden Presthold, was it? A New York station.
Oh yeah, no, a ton of unsung heroes like that. So you bet.
Yeah, I'll probably. Let's see, Augie passed away, and I haven't heard from Doug Campbell in a long time. I don't know if he's still around.
But. And then, of course, Ed Butterbaugh at CKLW, who wired the Detroit Tunnel. You had to love that.
What's the Detroit Tunnel?
Oh, well,
what do you mean?
Okay, the tunnel between Windsor and Detroit, normally tunnels you have no AM whatsoever. Well, Ed managed to wire the tunnel, so no matter where you were on the AM dial, you got CKLW. Even if you were, you know, tuned to WJR, you got CKLW. And so it became your tunnel station, and it was just a brilliant move. So, the Big 8 tunnel station. So he was...
quite a feat, huh?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, he left CKLW for JR in 86 and was there about 20 years before he died, but he was just terrific.
So I would say maybe it's generally accepted that the people with knowledge go to the city. So,
well, you know, sometimes, but remember that very often was because of the money. But I do want to hear your comments. But let me cut to today for a moment because we are having a crisis in radio, and a lot of people don't realize it. When you're talking about RF engineers that know AM, there's almost none left. No one coming up is learning this. No one. Most of the chief engineers are IT people today. They have a smattering of FM knowledge. But as far as a good RF engineer,
to learn
AM, Well, how long does it take to learn it? It's like anything else. You know, it depends on your aptitude for it and all that. I think if you had a burning desire to learn it, you could probably get your basics from the Cleveland Institute of Electronics. I think this is one of the schools we all took.
No, I don't think I don't think that necessarily, because the to get into antenna engineering, that's above that.
Sure, absolutely. But I mean, you have to have an electronics foundation before you do anything else.
I do have that.
Yeah.
But I don't. I'm not enough that I could design a directional antenna or necessarily have a skill to do it.
Although I have tuned them. A lot of that skill wouldn't be what you were doing day to day as a chief engineer anyway. That's where you go to your Washington consulting engineers. Work with them on that. So you're not expected to be able to, diplex 1260 with 1290 on the same tower, which would be almost impossible. Yeah. But, if you have the basic knowledge, you could do it. But as far as small towns versus big cities, more than anything, it was because you got paid more money.
Right.
It really came down to that. And then if you were in a choice situation with some of the little groups back in the day, you could kind of handle engineering for a group. Like Pearly Tribo out of Coma in Oklahoma City did most of the store stations, including Ouija in Minneapolis.
Yeah. But, I noticed listening to the smaller stations, like you can hear their distortion, but...
Well, a lot of that, money. Let's back up here. Because what you've got an owner who, no matter what's wrong, the only answer he have is, can't you fix it? No matter what it is.
The money's gone out.
That's right. We're talking even back in the day. You might still have Scully lathes while everybody else was just getting rid of their cart machines. So part of it is the dollars in it. And then, of course, is it a situation, if it's an AM station, where you've really got the land for the ground system? And if you're directional, you've got multiple towers, and you need a lot of land for ground system. And far too often, it's too inviting to sell it for a trailer park or something like that. So money. But WHO, and of course that was a well-heeled radio station in Des Moines with hands only. And
they still have good. They have good engineering today.
Yeah,
I've never heard them screw up. So.
Yeah, I would assume they would, and I would assume that they still, and I don't know directly, but I would assume they still have a good physical plant. It's like when AM stereo came out and people were talking about it, my answer was, of course, oh, good, static in both ears, because the reality was very few people perceive separation. They perceive fidelity, and by the time AM stereo was with us, the audio chains were so junked that putting AM stereo on it, unless you were going to go from the start and clean up the processing and the audio chain start to finish, get the transformers out of line, et cetera, and so forth, you were going to have garbage. And most stations, smaller stations especially, didn't do that.
Yeah, I didn't like it from the start, so I can't say that
it was going to be failed.
I think I could have predicted it.
The fact that the FCC didn't adopt a standard meant it was going to fail, because, you had Kahn, who was competing with Motorola, et cetera, and so forth. So...
we know the money's gone out of AM, but can we get an exact figure on for the total revenue of AM stations?
Well, you got a bigger problem. That's actually the secondary figure, believe it or not. Today, with the exception of EMF, which is non-commercial and religious oriented by donation and all that, but with the exception of EMF, every major broadcaster is so heavily leveraged that the debt service would choke a pony. And in some cases, you could have every one of your stations sold out at the top-of-line rate card and still not pay back the debt. So that's that's the biggest single problem. Now, revenue is declining, that's true, and there are issues. In the 70s, when Norm Pettit's brought back the idea of bartered syndication, which had been, you know, dead for, I won't belabor why, for a number of years. But anyway, it came back, and initially it was just, you know, soul stations or little progressive rock stations, who cared? But by 1980 or so, this is a guy who was pushing shows on highly rated radio stations, and it would be like, well, all you have to do is carry the spots in the program and the one promo in Morning Drive every... Well, the promo was a 60-second promo, but 30 seconds of it were a commercial. So I remember when this first came out, I pitched a fit because I said, you know, right now, and that was true still in 1980, Our biggest rate card is our national rate card. If we give away this time through barter, all the nationals are going to go around and buy it for, you know, back then it was probably $3 CPM. Now it's probably closer to 3 cents. But, you know, the bottom line is national rates fell apart as ways to get around it. Well, where we are today, the reason I bring that up, is that programmatic buying, I think, is the scourge on the industry. Now, the way it works is, you know, all these stations that have their long commercial clusters have the ability for an advertiser to go in at the last second, and if it's unsold inventory, to basically buy it at rock bottom prices so that it doesn't wind up being a PSA for free. And they're thinking, well, gee, you know, at least we're getting some money. Well, let me tell you, if the advertiser can go ahead and programmatically get things for 10 cents or 5 cents on the dollar, how long is it before he's not buying drive time? He's just going to programmatically get what he can get. And so we're doing we're doing a lot to our bottom line that's an absolute disaster. But as far as revenue, I still say debt service is much more important than revenue when looking at a forecast for the future of radio.
Well, maybe I should have said net income.
Yeah, well, in most cases, that would be zero.
Oh, boy. So I'm not going to get a job in that business if they can't afford to pay me.
Well, you know, again, if you're needed, they'll afford to pay somebody. You know how that is. They cut staff.
I don't know where the money goes.
Well, my favorite in this last year is the majors have all outsourced their traffic departments. They've outsourced them to India. So
what's the majors? What you mean?
I mean Audacy, iHeart, and Cumulus. All right, the people who own the most radio stations. You know, they're
iHeart. I hate that. I hate that word, iHeart.
Well, you know what that was? That was Clear Channel wanting to find a way to make it seem like they weren't a radio company. They wanted to seem like they were, you know, a digital company, a multimedia company. You know, God forbid you're saying you got towers.
Yeah.
You know, those are the three that have the glut of radio stations. And all of them have tremendous debt service, but while they're outsourcing their traffic to India and all that, still, if they need you, they can pay you if they need you.
Yeah, I know. Raleigh maybe still works there in WHO.
Uh-huh.
So in spite of their threatened bankruptcy, and you can find that on Yahoo Finance. So we'll show you their... your data, if they haven't gone bankrupt already. But what is it? What is it? The second or third time they're headed into bankruptcy?
Oh, so. Well, no, they continually rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic because, remember, when you're talking about this level of debt, it's not like you go to the bank and borrow money like you would for a house or a car. You've got multiple levels of debentures, everything from the top 2% that is a bank you know of to so many subordinated debentures that it would, you know, junk bonds and stuff that it would make your head swim. Well, let's face it, if you're the holder of a junk bond and Clear Channel or iHeart, whatever, files bankruptcy, you're going to wind up with nothing. So if they come to you and say, well, we want to convert some of that debt to equity, you might not want the equity, but basically the veiled threat is, or you'll get nothing. So they're always rearranging that and you know, playing with stock and all those kind of things. So sure, but the bottom line is still that these are heavily leveraged companies.
Now, did this have anything to do with the 2008? Debt crisis?
No.
Was it?
No. I'll tell you more than anything. What drove this was the 1996 Telecommunications Act. And why is because well, that's when the FCC suddenly said, oh, by the way, you can own more than 12. That's what it had gotten to at the time, 12. You can pretty much have half of them. Well, at that point, you had to become a buyer or a seller, because the economy of scale was going to mean that as an independent, you were going to have a hard time competing. And I can give you a couple examples where that's not necessarily true, but for the most part, it is true. And so suddenly, everybody was in a feeding frenzy. It was like musical chairs. And you see,
so the guy that was the winner there was the guy that owned Clear Channel, wasn't he?
Well, winner, and loser. I mean, again.
He sold it. He sold it before they.
No, it didn't work that way. You know, when you have that type of a feeding frenzy and you wind up suddenly, you've gone from maybe having 10 stations to 100 stations. What happens is the first couple years, you look like you're on fire. It's so wonderful. You're making so much money. Well, what you've done through economy of scale is you've taken those stations and you've slashed the staff. You've cut expenses down to nothing. Well, there's only two ways to have your bottom line, your cash flow, look good. One is to bring in more money, and the other is to cut expenses. So in the case of suddenly getting a bunch of properties, for a couple of years, you can cut expenses and look golden, even if you never have another dime in revenue on top of what you're getting. But eventually, you've got to operate them. Now, while you're in that glory period, while you're looking so good because what you're doing is cutting expenses, more people are throwing money at you. Oh, yeah, here, take our money. We'll invest, you know. And so you buy more. Well, that's fine, but ultimately, you're going to have to operate them. And that's sort of where we are now. It's not possible with this level of debt. So we'll see.
Yeah. And if interest rates are going up and they're, the
debentures that are there are there. You know, I mean, they're not variable for the most part. But, you know, interest rates going up are sort of a mixed thing for people in general. Obviously, if you're borrowing money, you're thrilled when interest rates go down. But on the other hand, if you've got a lot of cash positions, you're thrilled when you get more bang for your buck. So. But there's, you know, I mean, it's beyond the scope of this show. But when you look at gold at 4,100 and up, you say to yourself, oh, this is interesting. And we'll see. Mm-hmm. So that's for another platform, though.
So, but you go along with the idea that maybe that the drift is generally tended toward the higher IQ, or the people with more knowledge tending to be employed in the cities where they make $100,000 a year.
Not necessarily. It depends what they do. You know, you can say that about engineering, but anything else, I would say the political players triumph, not necessarily the most brightest or the best.
Well, look at the average income in Forest City, Iowa, where I am, is about $40,000.
Right.
And then you go to the Twin Cities, it's $80,000.
Right. But
so
now,
don't
what,
you think they might know more?
Right, not necessarily. I wish that's a wonderful way to think about it. Now, I'm gonna have to go here in a minute. But that's a wonderful way to think about it. But life is not fair. No, it doesn't equate to know more. Believe me, it doesn't.
So you don't believe in the just world fallacy?
I wish.
What you're saying?
Yeah, I wish. Life is not fair. You can take that to the bank.
Call
me again. I appreciate
it.
All right, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Good deal.
I
know. I'm blowing it. Yet another break. I just can't tell time. Well, I'll do my best on WGN Radio.
Imagine me still loving you after all you put me through. Well, I can't help it, I just do. Imagine that, and that's not the half. Imagine this if you can. I've stood more than I should stand, but I'd still take you back again. Imagine that. Ain't that a lie?
swallow my pride. Well, yes, yes, I guess you can. 'Cause you know you've always had my foolish heart right in the palm of your hand. So for what it's worth to you, it just don't matter what you might do.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and of course, that is Patsy Cline. 1962 on Decca, it was a flip side, imagine that. I played it because James had requested it, but also John and I were talking earlier today, probably a bad time to say it because every line is full, but we haven't heard from James in a while, and we hope that he is well. All right, so we thank David in Forest. Well, I don't know, are we done, David? Are you still there? I think we left David. And thanks for calling. We'll do it again sometime. Now got a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. So let's see. I believe that Lisa in Dundee has been waiting a while. So Lisa, welcome back to WGN.
Hi, Raleigh. I just wanted to quickly let you know that using mayonnaise on a grilled cheese sandwich is really good, and it's practical because mayonnaise, because it's oil-based, is able to heat at a higher temperature and longer, which allows the bread to crisp up and the cheese to melt thoroughly. And if you use a very, very thin layer of this mayonnaise, you won't even taste it. You'll just end up with a great grilled cheese.
I will take your word for it, since I will never be making one of these.
Now, I don't know about the butter mayonnaise mixture.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's just for a little extra flavor, because butter is good, but I'll bet people that make a grilled cheese on a regular basis will appreciate the mayonnaise.
Well, there you go. All right. So
it's very important, right?
Right. Well, no, there's a very good tip to the kitchen inclined.
There you go. Okay.
All right.
That's
thanks.
All I wanted to say. Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate the call. All right.
Bye.
So, 888-876-5593. Lisa has spoken. Keep that mayo in mind. When it said mayo on the screen, I thought maybe we were talking about mayo. You know, they dropped their Advantage customers, and I was going to say, well, that's really not for this show. But wrong mayo. All right, let's see what we've got from Eduardo in Tampa. I believe we got some votes on our hand here for the World's Worst Hit Record. So what you got for me, Eduardo?
Yeah, boy, trying to stay warm here. I feel like I'm back in Chicago.
You know, I guess we're still pretty warm here, but the rest of the country seems like it's Arctic air.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but at least we don't got snow.
Well, that's true. Thing. It happens occasionally down there, though, as you know, and everybody clamors.
Oh, yeah, that's what I heard, yeah.
Yeah, it makes the first headline on the news and everything else. But no, it's not going to be like Chicago. So what you got for votes?
Yeah, so my song is going to be by Cher, Believe. I think it came out in the 90s. But I heard it, like, if you're shopping in a store or,
What is
outside,
it?
Outside, yeah. Believe, that's the name of the song.
Believe.
Believe.
By Cher?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Very good. All right. Consider it on the list. Thanks.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
So, yes. Now, if you hate Belief also, well, then you got to let us know, because it is a cumulative total. That's right. I'm not going to tell you what's leading the list at the moment, but I will tell you it's the usual suspects. Karen in Chicago, what you voting on?
Oh, well, first of all, I wanted to tell you I am officially done with therapy, and I'm going for my last x-ray today.
Yay! Now, how do you feel?
Wonderful. I'm so glad I'm done. And I don't have a lot of pain. Now and then, it'll bother me if I do a little more than I should, or if sometimes you just hurt because I'm, because you're old. You know how that is. Okay, and I have some turkeys. I also thought you were talking about HumanWare. Now, I know that there is someone here in Chicago from HumanWare. He's at the Lighthouse. And I'm wondering if they don't have a program also, my nephew got help from, I'm not sure, but I know that he got technology. He got a laptop and I think something else in Wisconsin. So if you want me to, I can call Jimmy tomorrow and ask him.
Okay.
If that would help, Jim. Okay, and my turkeys.
Yes.
Okay, my old buddy Bobby Goldsboro.
Oh, honey?
Oh, God, honey, and that other one. Pardon me, but it sounds like he's talking about statutory rape.
Which one is it? Not watching
the,
Bobby Goldsboro.
The woman...
Summer the first time.
The 17-year-old and the 21-year-old woman.
Yes, yeah. Right. Summer the first time.
Oh, God, okay. That song just makes me cringe. And hey, Jude.
Ah, good, okay. I think you're our first Jude this year. Let me see. Yeah. Yeah, good.
And Lost, somebody mentioned Lost Kiss. God, I hate that. Last Kiss.
Last Kiss, yes. J. Frank Wilson and the Cavaliers. All right.
Hate that.
Oh, well, where can my baby be? The Lord took her away from me. All right, J. Frank Wilson, okay. And
that's
the Cavaliers.
Pinnacle.
All right.
And I am right now, that's it, but I'll probably think of some more and call you.
I'm counting on it.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, appreciate it.
Bye.
All right, so 8888-ROLLYE. Now, Isaac is on the south side. What's happening tonight, Isaac?
Hi, Raleigh. How's it going today?
I can't complain. How about yourself?
I'm doing as best as I can be. I found out today that my car needs a new engine, so basically I need a new car, but I'm making do. So that last week, I don't know if it was Thursday or Friday, either way, I went to go see the Betty LaVette concert. At the, what was it called? The Maui Music Festival.
Okay.
The first annual Maui Music Festival. I will say this. It's the first music festival, so they still, you know, are what did they say, ironing out the kinks. I thought it was pretty nice. They had Lisa Fisher sing as well. She has that song, How Can I Stand the Pain or something like that from the 90s. She did an excellent job. I've never seen a musician sing with two microphones. And she did that somehow. And then Betty LaVette came on last, and she blew me away. I was absolutely shocked by how great that performance was that she gave. You know, she's an 80-year-old woman. I was expecting, like, a lady. They had a seat, you know, like, when they prepped her stage or, you know, changed the thing, they put a seat in front of the microphone. So I'm expecting some, like, old lady, like, I think Dionne Warwick, when she sings, she sits down and, you know, sings. I thought she was going to be singing, like, I didn't listen to any of her songs before going, but I definitely remember what you said. So I'm thinking she's going to be singing, like, you know, I don't know, like, some old songs that, you know, were big in, like, the back in the day. She came out and just rocked the house. Her music from back in the day has certainly changed. She is leaning way more into the blues side of things. All new stuff. She's put out an album as recently as like 2020, maybe 2023. Nominated 8 times for Grammys. Her voice, I think that she is doing a really good job of using the voice that, you know, the voice changes over time. And I think she's doing an excellent job of using the voice that she has now to really display a lot of emotion in the songs that she's singing. I was telling my friend how every song that she sang, I just felt like I could almost cry because they were just so, like, they were just like dripping and, like, you know, so much emotion. A lot of them were talking about, you know, I don't want to say like a woman scorned, but like a woman who has been through a lot through 80. What is this? She said this is her 60th year in the music industry. She's working on her 5th career. She sang a song called I Hold No Grudge. One of the lyrics is, but a woman who's been forgotten may forgive, but never forget. The songs in that type of vein. Her last song that she sang, which I thought was really good, was called Close As I'll Get to Heaven. And I thought that it just really, with the context that we talked about, it really just summarized, I felt, how she was feeling in the sense that her standing on that stage right there, and I'll mind you, by the time that she came on the stage, it might have been on a liberal estimate, it might have been 30 people in the audience. It might. But her standing there on that stage is as close as to heaven as she will get. You know, this is her joy. This is what makes her happy. And this is as close as heaven as to heaven as she will get. And she just sang the hell out of that song. And I've been listening to all of her songs all weekend long. She was really funny. I had so much energy. She came out in heels and did mostly standing for her whole performance. Like I said, had so much energy, really funny. She said that a lot of self-deprecating type of humor. She said that she loves Chicago. She has recorded many songs, most of them flops, but never recorded a flop in Chicago. She said that she has been diagnosed with a really, really poor ailment called CRS. Hey, remember shit.
Yep.
She talked about how she has the sheet music sitting there, and she turns the page, and she says that initially she was embarrassed by that until she performed with Jagger and Bob Dylan, and she talked about how Jagger has a monitor there, two monitors over there, a monitor up there, a monitor down here, also that he, you know, and the lyrics are popping up on the monitor as he's singing. So she lost, you know, embarrassment after that. She did an excellent job, Riley.
I'm delighted. I'm thrilled.
I'm blown away by her, yes. The last thing that she did, her thing, as I went online and looked up her other performances, at the end of the performance, after every song she sings, she thanks her crowd. Thank you, thank you, thank you. At her last performance, she essentially puts the microphone down and walks away. She doesn't bow. She doesn't say thank you for coming out. And we were left there like wanting more. We were left there like, what the hell, you know, is she going to come back out? But that's her thing. And it's almost like saying, you know, hey, I'm 80 years old. Why do I have to say goodbye? What more do you want from me? You know, I've thanked you all. You know, have a good night. It was really an amazing song, an amazing performance. So I would like to request a song by her, one of her more recent songs,
okay,
called In the Meantime.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't play it tonight, play it tomorrow.
I will, because we're just about out of time. Literally got minutes left. In the meantime, I'll do it.
In the meantime, thank you so much, Robin.
All right, thanks for calling, and thanks for the review. I appreciate it. All right, so we'll hopefully get to Ruth before the show is over, and hopefully 2020 News. Haven't done that tonight yet. Maybe we will next on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, we'll forgo the bumper because we've only got a couple minutes left. I want you to hear 2020 News, and then we'll get to Ruth's vote right here.
Game of Thrones plus Queen for a Prey and Hide and Geek. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News. Flushing Meadows. Squalid gold. One percenter New York Mets owner Steve Cohen is auctioning off his 18-karat gold toilet sculpture, The Times reports. Bidding for the Art Deco pot of gold set to start at a staggering $10 million. Strictly for the filthy rich. All that glitters may be bold, since gold diggers are being told the loaded loo actually works. The Mets magnate poised to part with his stool's gold, taking the money if not the runs. Some like it hot. Tis the thievin' to be Polly. Some cross-dressing character's purported package-pinching porch pirating has made him a screen starlet suspect on doorbell cams along Florida's Gulf Shore. Clued looks like a lady's been picked up with a precious pile of pilfered packages, police profess. It's a mixed-up, muddled-up, shook-up world, but this mock-smock walk on the wild side will have to kick off his kinky boots to cool his high heels in the slammer. Falling for Men in Blue, nyuk nyuk schmuck. Some stooge of a suspect in the Sunshine State hightails it in Hot Wheels, cops say, when the heat hone in on a homeboy hiding in a handy house. SWAT shows up, but a search of the stakeout scene turns up no supposed schnook. Suddenly, the sky falls in for the son of a run, as he pratfalls and plunges right through the ceiling down into the awaiting arms of the hunks with heavy weapons. The body cam footage should certainly be a barrel of laughs for the boys back at the barracks. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.
And there you have it. All right, Ruth and Gurney going to vote on the world's worst hit records, and you get the final say here for the final few minutes. What you voting on?
Oh, well, first of all, I tried to get through last Thursday before Halloween. It was over 2 hours. I have the most incredible ghost stories about a World War II veteran, and ironically, his son, a Vietnam veteran, who had a ghost story about a wife that died over a fentanyl overdose and speaks to her in his glove compartment. And the costumes that
wait
I
had.
Wait a minute.
And speaks to her in his glove compartment, like right now?
Anytime he goes out to the car, he keeps a cover.
Uh-huh.
He keeps a cover over the car. And
yeah.
There's more to say about this.
She's in the glove compartment.
To the chase.
This is a man who needs to be checked.
She speaks. The spirit is in the glove compartment.
I see. Of course she is.
Okay.
All right.
So 2 years in Vietnam, you know, and he was always somebody who would diss people who were into astrology or any other paranormal things.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, has this come back to haunt him more than you could imagine. But anyway, back to, I was really ill yesterday. I usually do 5 hours of prayer. I could barely get through 2 hours. And I don't speak about medical conditions until I have a Passover. And what caused me to become incredibly ill was circumstances and bacteria and other related indirect things. But the medical condition, it's almost completely cleared. And so that's an amazing thing for me. Now back to the turkey songs. I would like to request, I have several things on the pie.
I have 2 minutes.
I'm going to go.
You do understand I got 2 minutes.
I do less than 2 minutes. Not like the other people out there. I know how to count my blessings and get my healings, especially from St. Raphael, who's in charge of the blind.
90 seconds.
I like to grease this palm. Okay. So a goodbye, Miss Apple American pie for the city of New York. Be careful what you ask for on that Custer song that you played.
All right, so wait a minute.
No.
Just give me titles. Do you want to put American Pie on the list?
That's it, but I call it American Apple Pie.
Well, I don't care what you call it. We're going to know what the hit is. All right.
New York.
Okay.
All right. Good night.
All right,
good night.
Thanks. Appreciate it. All right, so let's get New York on there and also American Pie. All right. That's the way it goes. Now, tomorrow night is another abbreviated show, and I believe that it is the Blackhawks again, and that means we will have 1 hour after it from midnight to one. We can vote or talk about whatever you want. As far as that goes, I'll have plenty of starter subjects, thanks to Bob, who sends me all those wonderful links. But now, let me do this, if I can, before I'm completely out of time, but I'm pretty sure midnight is the time tomorrow, and we'll find out who is the interruption courtesy of. I think, pretty sure that it's the Blackhawks. Yes, okay. It is a Blackhawks pregame and Blackhawks versus New Jersey at 8:30 Central. And then me at midnight. So we'll have an hour tomorrow. Then Thursday night is a full show. So that is the week in review, or not in review, coming up. So on that note, we thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling. We'll do it all again, at least for an hour tomorrow. Until then, I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.